I'm Jamie.
And I'm Beth. Welcome to Thief Steals the Podcast.
Where I steal a podcast.
And I steal it back.
Okie dokies. Today we are talking about the third episode of the fifth season called The First Contact Job. Beth, what did you think?
All right, so first things first, this episode was very straightforward.
Yes.
There was not a lot to be, like, misinterpreted or, like, confused. Like, it was, as far as leverage goes, especially, like, very easy to follow the concepts.
Yeah.
But I was confused by one thing in this episode.
Yes. And Please do share.
It was that I know that the Mark's name was James Kamak. And actually...
It's Kanak.
Oh, fuck.
That's the entire joke all the way through the episode.
It's so genuine. I actually did just mispronounce it. That was so funny. No. Okay. But the entire episode, I kept hearing James Cameron, which really changes the context.
Here's the thing that I feel like that's a you problem.
It was. But it was every time I was like, James Cameron. I was like, that's not the Titanic guy. I was like, this is a different thing.
I just want to know how you managed to get Cameron from Kanak.
I think I just must have just misheard it the first time. And then, like, you know when you hear something and then it becomes, like, the niggle in your brain and you just can't unhear it? Like that, you know?
But the whole joke was
they use, like, a different name every time. And I just kept hearing Cameron. James Cameron every fucking time. Oh, God. So that was interesting. But other than that, very easy to follow, very understandable and straightforward.
Yeah.
And let's be real, that's a me problem, not a them problem.
And you did get exactly what you asked for.
You did get
Parker and Harrison in suits as the Men in Black.
Yeah, it was a bit of a vibe. Although I will say that it was weird that James made such a fucking deal about them needing a warrant and then they came back with any old fucking piece of paper and he was like, yeah, okay. Like, man didn't even look at it.
Man was stressed, okay?
I don't care. I think it was funny that he was like so much emphasis on needing it and then didn't even fucking check it. Didn't even ask his lawyer who was wandering around with him the whole bloody episode to check it. Also, that lawyer deserves so much financial compensation for putting up with this entire scenario. That was insane. Insane. And also, why was it the lawyer's job to organize the press? That feels like it should have been like some kind of PA.
I mean, it's kind of a PR job, so...
I suppose so.
I also guess because the lawyer would be the one organising the actual sale in that. So, I don't know if he would be the only one, like, necessarily organising the press in that, but he'd certainly have a hand in that, because there's also all sorts of things in terms of, like, confidentiality and, like, who knows what and, like, trade secrets and all of that sort of stuff. So, like, you know, if you're... organizing it, you want to make sure that nothing's getting released to the press that shouldn't be released to the press. So I can see him being involved, but yeah, you're right. Maybe he seemed to be the only one organizing anything to do with it. So.
Yeah, he seems to be like the only person. And I gotta be real, like the way that science is presented in this episode, like I understand that obviously like he thinks he's discovering this whole thing and he wants to make sure that his is the only name on it. But like, from my experience within, like, the scientific community, like, if you think that you've found something cool, usually the first instinct is to tell every other person in your field to be like, hey, can someone double check this and make sure I'm not fucking crazy?
But that's the difference. He's not a scientist.
Oh,
he's just some dickhead who wants to be rich and famous.
Oh my God, stop. He's a little... They even mentioned Tesla in this episode. But like,
and we have to cut that out because it was borderline slander.
Sorry,
I've just specifically
that joke is just
taken.
For you.
I'm going to leave it in, but I'm just going to take out the name, so you have no idea who we're talking about. Plausible deniability.
Just put a little bleep.
But no, so he's just some guy who wants credit for inventing shit that he didn't invent.
Yeah,
he like that's the
he
thing.
He just
like,
wants his name on shit.
Yeah. He went...
doesn't know what he's doing.
He started an engineering degree and then dropped out because it was too hard and his dad died so he could just bankroll other people who were actually good at inventing shit and then basically just cut them out of the deal and slapped his name on it.
Yeah, basically.
And the idea is because he did it the loudest and the most that as time passes, they'll forget the people who actually invented it.
Yeah.
Look, which is actually kind of how science works, unfortunately.
Unfortunately, that does tend to be the way. Particularly if the people who invented or discovered something were not cishet white men.
And especially if, as he's doing, he's like fully discrediting the people who did actually invent it so that nobody will believe them when they say, hey, actually, that was me.
I do have another question. How common of a job do we think a satellite dealer is?
I'm going to say very niche.
Because this guy literally turned to, again, his lawyer and was like, get me a satellite dealer within like an hour or something, or you're fired. And I was like, again, seems like it's not in his job description, but also,
well, I would say
satellite dealer.
So I would guess, out of no knowledge, no nothing, that there's probably maybe like a half a dozen companies that can launch satellites into space in America. So maybe six, generously. And for those six, I would say there's probably like three or four sort of dealers or reps that work with them. So I'm saying this is incredibly niche. Like, I reckon less than 20 people.
Yeah, in a country.
In a country.
And, like, the US is, like, quite a, in terms of geography, like, it's quite a big
country,
piece of land. But, like, also, like, let's quickly discount any kind of government space agency. So that gets rid of NASA. Like, you're only looking at private.
Yeah.
Right? So, and then, like, within a reasonable distance. Like, the likelihood is so small.
Actually, I think the likelihood's increased by the type of company. He's running a technological, advanced tech company.
Okay, valid.
So the chances are they're probably, like, it's like, you know, like Silicon Valley in San Francisco. Like, a lot of the really, like, advanced tech companies just sort of, like, club together.
Yeah, okay. No, that makes more sense. But I literally was like, okay, that seems like you've just given a man an impossible task and told him he'll get fired if he can't complete it. And I feel like...
But again, we've established the only professional in this goddamn episode is that lawyer. Like, he's doing the most.
He's giving 150%. Yeah. Like, although...
He's a horrible person, but, like, he's doing his job.
I do not appreciate the way that he treated, like, the victim of the week, obviously, because, like, dick fucking move. He obviously knew what was going on. But, like, also, he was the only person doing his job. Like, actually, well, the security guards were also doing their job. Actually, credit where credit's due. But anyway, it was whack. Did you have anything that you wanted to talk about? I have a couple more, like, silly things, but I also have, like, I really actually only have, like, one serious thing that I want to talk about.
Do we want to get the serious thing out of the way then and then just move on to the vibey stuff or?
Yeah, we can do that.
Yeah, go right ahead.
Okay, so the crux of this episode, right, and it is very prevalent from the very beginning through the middle into the end of the episode, is that Nate just did not listen to the victim of the week.
Yes.
And, like, this was abundantly obvious.
In the first meeting. The
first interaction. Yeah. And, like, Nate just was not fucking listening. Mm-hmm. And I do feel a little bit like they were, like, feeding us this on a silver spoon. Mm-hmm. Like, they kept re-emphasizing that, like, Nate just didn't listen to the victim. And I was kind of like, yeah, but why not? Because, like, by the middle of the episode, like, they give him the $1 million.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, he's like, it's a lot of money. And I was like, yeah, it's a lot of money, but it's not, it's literally not what he asked for. It's literally not what he fucking gives a shit about. And you should know this. Like, and my
he note, literally said, it's not about the money. I just want to work again.
Exactly. And, like, I have a note that says, I don't know why Nate is surprised by this. Like, he is usually pretty on top of people's motivations, but he totally missed the mark on this. And the guy literally told him what he wanted very bluntly and to his face. So what's the problem? Like,
it seems weird. It seems like we're reverting to, like, season one Nate again. For no reason.
But even in season one, I would argue that part of what Nate excelled at was understanding what was wanted of him.
Mm.
And, like, yeah, there was, like, motivation for him to prove himself and, like, he, you know, was pushing the team too far and stuff because he was, you know, inebriated most of the time. And, like, there are problems there. Don't get me wrong. But one thing that Nate has always been good at is reading the situation. Like, even when he was at his most unhinged, like, he was still pulling shit off, even if it was only by the skin of the teeth.
Yeah.
But, like, he was reading the situation. That is his job. Like, everyone has to read the situation as part of their function within the team. But Nate's entire purpose is reading the situation and putting all the pieces together. So the fact that they just had him completely miss the very bluntly, because it also wasn't fucking obscured at all. Like, he was told to his face, this is what I care about. And I don't know, it just, it felt really weird. as a choice in the episode, I don't really understand what the motivation of the writer was. Because this doesn't feel like I'm learning anything about Nate. It actually feels like it's a complete reversion on his character for the last, like, four and a bit seasons.
Yeah. I don't understand where that comes from this week. I'm just assuming that, like, this sort of guy annoys the fuck out of Nate. Like, the dude that he's going against, like, this is the sort of dude that, like, he just really doesn't like. And so, for some reason, he decided that what he thought the client needed was what he thought the client needed rather than actually listening to what the client said they wanted.
Yeah.
Like, it's almost like he doubted the client when the client said, no, I just want to work again. He was like, well, actually.
Yeah, I don't know. It felt really weird. Like, I understand what you're saying. And, mm-hmm. like, you know, I think you're right. Like, I think clearly that's what happened. Like, he just didn't listen. Like, he's just not paying attention. He thinks he knows better, which is in line with Nate. I'll give you that.
But it's just weird because previously we've never had this issue with clients before.
Yeah, like, he'll ignore the team and mm-hmm. stuff, but, like, usually the people he's working with in terms of, like, the public is pretty, you know, and normally, actually, Nate is the one who is correcting the rest of the team
yeah.
on what the mark or what the victim yeah. most values, like, because that is his fucking job, is to read the people and to play them accordingly, and, like, I don't know, it just felt really odd. And then the only thing that I can assume that it is, like, related to in terms of an overarching character situation is the line that he says at the end to Sophie, where she's like, I knew you figured out eventually, which is like, I still don't understand why he didn't understand it immediately. But also he says, well, what happens when eventually comes too late? And I'm like, that feels like it's foreshadowing. And like, I assume, you know, that could have something to do with their relationship. It could have something to do with something like overarching plot-y. It could be something with Nate's character that we haven't really been introduced to yet. Like, it could be a number of things, but I also feel like there was a way they could have worked that line in. Like, if they wanted to do foreshadowing for something and they wanted it to be about Nate missing shit.
They're normally more subtle than that.
Normally more subtle, but also they could have done it in character and they could have done it in a more interesting way.
Yeah.
Because, like, this just kind of felt like Sophie made a couple of jabs through the episode about, like, oh, well, maybe if you listened a little bit better. And it's like, yeah, okay, but you could have done this as, like, they were having some kind of argument between themselves and that's what he wasn't listening in, because I think that would make more sense. It's more in line with what we've seen so far. The fact that he was straight up ignoring a client is whack. And I don't know. Like, I assume they're going somewhere with it, but I just don't think that, like, for them to have that, if it is foreshadowing, I don't think they needed to be this heavy-handed about it, and I also don't think it was executed very well. Like, it, because it just feels really in your face and really, like, as an audience member, especially as a first-time viewer, like, who doesn't really know if it is going to be relevant, it feels very, like, spoon-feedy and, like,
it's a weird choice.
Yeah.
Regardless.
Yeah. Anyway, that was my only, like, really, like, serious thing to talk about. Everything else I have is just, like, notes of things I thought were fun or weird.
Yeah. Now we need to talk about what I think the most important thing about this episode is.
The duet?
Two good old boys behind the wheel. Chasing down bad guys in Lucille. It is such an iconic moment.
I am so
excited for you to finally have two good old boys. We had a moment where we were talking about ghost faces in the Supernatural podcast and you were like humming the theme song and I'm like, I cannot share this yet because this is such a delightful moment. I was like, I need Beth to see this like organically. Like Beth cannot know about two good old boys before she sees two good old boys.
I just love that they found a way to work the name Lucille into it. Like, I'm so excited.
Like, it is such a cute moment, and I love the way that, like, at first, Elliot's like, I'm not singing that.
Mm-hmm.
But by the end of it, he's just as, if not more into it than Hardison is.
I love that he goes the higher octaves. Yeah. I think that's so fun. Mm-hmm. Like, yes, we love to see it. And also, album when? Like, I...
Look, I will find, there is a remix somewhere of Two Good Old Boys. I will find it for you because it is iconic in every way.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I'm sorry. They just don't do it like this anymore. You know what I mean? But no. Yeah. So we get so much good Hardison Elliot content this week.
It is very so fun. Much.
It is so fun. I love the little bit where, like, you know, Hardison's directing Elliot and, like, where he's got to stand to, like, bounce the signal off the moon.
I do love seeing the Elliot dot come very rapidly back to Lucille. I think that's quite fun.
I love the fact that they didn't actually show us. Like, I feel like if they'd shown us Elliot running out the van, it wouldn't have had the same impact. So the little dot is a very clever way to, like...
It's very comedically effective.
Yes. It's like, Elliot is hauling ass.
Oh, I have a question about this as well. Why are they excited about the moon during the day?
I think that's literally just Harrison being a nerd about being able to bounce a signal off the moon.
Okay.
Like, I think it's less about the moon during the day and more about, like, behold my genius. Okay. I'm so smart. I'm going to bounce a radio signal off the moon. And guess what? It's not even night, so the moon's not even fully out yet. You know what I mean?
Here's the thing. The reason why I was confused by this is because recently I saw a TikTok. And it was about someone who had traveled from somewhere in the US or somewhere in the UK. One of the two, I can't remember. And they'd come to Australia and they were absolutely flabbergasted that you could see the moon during the day.
Yeah, it happens sometimes.
Well, it happens all the fucking time. But they were like, that's not a thing. And I was like, you have to be shitting us. Like, you can just see the moon during the day. That is not...
Yeah, it's not that bright. You have to go looking for it.
Like, yeah, like, it's not like shiny, but you can absolutely see it. And it's not like it's hard to see if it's prominent. But, and so I just assumed that it was like international people just like pulling legs. Do you know what I mean? Like, I figured it was kind of like a not hit a fuck spiders kind of situation. Mm. But now I'm like, is that a fucking thing? I might just quickly Google.
Google it. Because I was pretty sure it was just like certain times of like month based on the lunar cycle.
Okay. NASA says the moon actually spends almost as much time in the daytime sky as the night. You just have to look a little harder to see it. So they must be able to. But like, I was so confused. I was like, why is he so excited about the moon during the day? But maybe he is just being like a big nerdy nerd about it.
Yeah. Well, yeah, I've always assumed Hardison's like excitement comes less from like moon during the day and more like we're using the moon. Like, look how clever you are. It's using the original satellite. Like it's the moon.
Utilizing the moon is cool.
Yeah.
But just seeing it out and about in the day, I was like, okay, yeah, why are we excited about this?
Yeah, I've always put it down as like, he's so excited because he's like, it's the original satellite. It's the moon.
Yeah, okay, cool. Because I really got hung up on the during the day part of that because I was like, why is that relevant? Okay.
It's like, I'm so clever, I thought to use the moon and I'm not even using it at night when most people think about the moon.
I did love Elliot's line as well around that scene where he was saying, you never know when you might have to fight an alien.
They did fully contemplate having a flashback scene there where Elliot is actually fully... like fighting an alien. And then they did decide against it because they did not want to canonize aliens in the Leverage universe.
But I agree with that decision.
They did fully like contemplate for a minute there, implying that yes, in fact, Elliot has been to space and has in fact fought an alien.
The way that would have strengthened the interrelational situation between Leverage and Supernatural.
What's so good about this all, though, is it would also lend that little bit more authenticity to his mate, Lenny.
Oh, my God. Lenny is the most underrated character who only exists off screen that has ever existed. I love Lenny.
We know almost nothing about him, just what he randomly rants about. But Lenny is iconic. Mm-hmm. And his entire, like, nerdy, hillbilly, alien, obsessed conspiracy theory, truther, personality, iconic in everything. I also love the way that he's purposefully, like, taken traits from Hardison.
Mm.
And, like, the orange soda.
Yes, I noticed that. I was going to say, like, the orange soda, like, got me because I was like, oh my God, Hardison. And then we also have Hardison at one point during the episode being like, hey, like, I told him that kind of thing. And I was like, oh, that's very fun. But what I fucking loved was that even though Hardison gave him the alias and Sophie coached him on it, Elliot 1,000,000% was straight up using the Nate tactic of wear a hat and be annoying.
And have a bad accent.
And it worked flawlessly. Mm-hmm. I was like, this is hilarious. Why is this so
effective?
Perfect? Yeah.
It was literally like the Bethany tactic of if I just don't shut up. They will eventually ask me to leave and I can go home.
Don't call me out like this. Oh, God. Actually, Elliot was giving the performance of his fucking life when he's like, lying over, like, James or whatever, and he's, like, clutching the vest and, like, talking about it. I was just like, this is so fun. Like, what a wild time.
And he also has the moment of genius with the shoes.
The shoes. The empty boots are, number one, so fucking funny, but also, number two, genuinely spooky. Like, can you imagine if you, like, went to the bathroom at work and you came back and it was just all your co-workers' shoes?
As if they just,
like, as if they just zapped out of existence. Not abandoned. It's not they took off their shoes and ran away. It's like just their shoes are there. Everything else, like the computers are still wearing away, the music's still going, you know, nothing else out of place.
They were just taken with their shoes left behind.
Yeah. Like, wouldn't you be so spooked? I would. Mm-hmm. What a good prank.
Yeah.
Maybe we should do it someday.
Can we also get a zip cord and get sucked into a vortex?
Oh my God.
Wait, is this Leverage's version of Super Mega Turbo Gator? Except for Leverage has an in-universe explanation for why you looks kind of jank. Because it is, in fact, DIY special effects.
So, my sequence of notes is, like, when they're first sort of having all of the effects go off and it's, like, weirdly slow motion and, like, zooming in and out. Like, it's basically they're using a lot of camera techniques to make it feel disorientating. Like, I fully understood what was happening. But, like, from a film perspective.
The choices make sense.
But it's so funny because I was like, this is giving Supernatural so hardcore. And then there was, like, the ringing and the smashing and he put his hands over his ears and I was like, oh my God, it's Castiel saying hello. James is Dean in 401. Like, I... It was so fun. And then we saw Sophie and the fucking whirly green thing and, like, the banging on the glass. And I was like, never mind. It's not Supernatural. It's Doctor Who. Because I was like, especially the, like, level of effect, like, the quality and the green and the, like, banging on the... I was like,
I'm like,
the accent. I was like, this is Doctor Who.
That may very well be intentional, like...
Yeah, quite intentionally.
Leverage has never shied away from the fact that the creators are massive nerds about Doctor Who.
Yeah.
Never.
You can see it just in the character of Hardison. Like, you don't need anything else to prove that.
Hardison's had at least half a dozen Doctor Who quotes already. Like, I feel like 2 weeks ago he literally had the quote, like, bow ties are cool.
Like, yeah, and, like, they use aliases from all the time. And
even back in season one, you have the scene where they're in the van and bank shop job, and he's like, I had to fucking, you know, do this, just to torrent last night's episode of Doctor Who.
Mm-hmm.
Like,
yeah,
they're nerds.
Absolutely.
And I love that this week we get confirmation that Elliot is a massive fuck-off nerd.
Oh, yeah.
Like, no surprises. We've already been new. Like, we've already had hints. But, like, he whips out, like, Drake's theory of the universe and it's like, no, you're a nerd, bro.
Mm-hmm.
Just admit it. You're a nerd.
100%.
This is a safe space. Yeah. You can say it out loud.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So, I love that we get so much nerd energy in this episode. And I do have a quote. Well, not a quote. I wrote a note.
Okay. So, and you're quoting yourself.
I'm quoting myself.
Okay.
And the quote from me is just, nerds in love, haha, end quote, Bethany, 2023. Because Parker and Hardison this episode...
Mm-hmm.
Shut the front door. They're so cute. What the fuck? Like, they're... The writers, I think they were like... They knew... I assume they already knew this was going to be the last season.
Yeah.
They're going hard on Parker Hardison. And I love it.
Mm-hmm.
I am eating it up. It's delightful.
Like, I'm in love with all of Parker's ET references this week.
Yeah, she was really going hard on that, actually. I was like, damn, girl. That's like 4, I think, times she references it.
Which, like, to be fair, this isn't the first time. We have whole bunches of, like, Ghostbusters references previously, which I think it's a really interesting insight into Parker as a character, because basically all of the references and, like, that she makes are to, like, movies from the 80s.
Yeah,
like,
very specifically. Cult
classic movies from the 80s, like, Ghostbusters, E.T., like, there are others, but I can't think of them right now. But, like, essentially it's like, oh, this is her entire taste.
Yeah. Do you know what's really funny about that? And I am going to make about Supernatural for 3 seconds. Is that it does feel like Hardison has sat her down for movie night and has shown her specifically these genres of movies.
Are you trying to make
movies,
this bestial coded?
And I'm just saying. I'm just saying. But yes, no, I did love Parker and Hardison's energy this episode. I love them as the government agents.
And basically the equivalent of Men in Black.
So fucking
in fun. The suits.
I don't know.
Thank you, Nadine Hayter.
I don't know why they chose to have Hardison say toodles as they were leaving. Power after they move. Were told they needed the warrant. But power it was move. So funny.
It's a power move.
And who says toodles? Like,
it's an iconic choice and I love it.
I love the word toodles. Like, I don't know, something about it just, like, brings me joy.
It hits the right amount of, like, dismissive.
It's so funny to see someone who is, like, impersonating a government agent say toodles. Because, like, I wouldn't be that shocked if, like, casually on the street someone said, like, toodaloo or something. Mm. But, like, a government official isn't going to leave a press conference like, toodles, you know?
I don't know what to say. Like, he's just that iconic. That power move is everything.
So funny. I do love it. And just, like, the delivery of just that one word, like, what, two syllables, three syllables max.
And I love them debating date night. And, like, who gets to choose.
Oh, so cute.
And they're like, oh, we can go bungee jumping. And he's like, we've already been bungee jumping. She's like, not off a hot air balloon.
Mm-hmm. Also, I love that he's like, we'll do like the starry, like candlelight, like thing. And I'm like,
candlelight picnic. And she's like, oh, I like fire.
Yeah. And I'm like, you guys are so weird. I love it. Like, they're such a fun couple, I think, because they're so odd. Like, and they just worked. Like, they both appreciate each other's like idiosyncrasies and stuff. And I just think it's very sweet. But also at the end, when Parker, like, brings over the basket of the stuff and she's like, oh, like, the rain has, like, ruined everything. And then I was like, I immediately knew what was going to happen. Like, I was like, oh, Hudson's going to, like, have, like, a star lamp or whatever and it's going to be very cute. And then it was. I don't know why they went with green, though.
No.
I wonder if maybe it was just, like, to make it better, like, more visible.
It pops on camera more.
For the camera, yeah. But I did think it was a nice, wholesome way to end the episode. Mm-hmm. Although, one thing I will say is that, and we've touched on this before, because Nate and Sophie are now partnered up and paired off, and Parker and Hardison are partnered up and paired off, like, we got two closing scenes this episode. One was Nate and Sophie, one was Parker and Hardison, and Elliot just kind of wasn't anywhere.
Mm.
And it felt kind of, like, dismissive of his character. It's kind of like, oh, like, at the end of the, like, day, you know, they finished the, you know,
especially considering I think this is like a more Elliot focused episode.
Yeah, he gets like so much, so involved in this. Mm-hmm. And like, you know, yeah, like at the end of the con, at the end of the day, like Nate and Sophie have their little moment together and Parker and Hardison have their little moment together. And it kind of feels like Elliot just gets forgotten. Mm-hmm. And especially after last week where he fucking barely interacted with like anyone in the team. Like it just feels like a weird distance between him and the rest as like a collaborative thing. And even though like we had him interacting with Hardison, particularly this episode, like it just felt odd for me. Like I feel like he's unfortunately being kind of sidelined in favor of giving the romantic pairings a more prominent sort of place on screen. And I kind of don't appreciate that just personally. I probably wouldn't notice it so much except because it is such an ensemble and it's like,
yeah,
four of the five are prominently featured in the last 2 minutes and then one person is just not there at all, you know?
Maybe he's going to visit Lenny.
Maybe. Like, I'm sure whatever Elliot's doing, he's just, like, the real reason will be that whatever Elliot is doing by himself is either completely buck wild and would require actual time, devoted to it, or he's just not doing anything. Like, he's just by himself. And so it's like, it's not worth including just in terms of like, you only have so much screen time to put in an episode.
No, I know what it is. He's finally got the sea salt instead of the iodized salt.
Yeah, he's actually gone to the shops to pick up the right kind of salt. Mm-hmm. And I get it. You use different salts for different things, but there's no fucking problem with iodized salt. I feel like I've said this before, either on this podcast or on the Supernatural one. I feel like I've even said it recently, but like we fortify foods for a reason. There is no problem with iodized salt. Iodine deficiencies are real and serious, and you should not want them. There's a reason we fortify ourselves. Yeah, I don't know. I missed a closing scene with Elliot, but I understand why it would be missing in terms of, like, if he just wasn't doing anything interesting enough to be on screen.
Yeah. So how did you feel about the whole alien abduction of everything this week?
I thought it was fun. I thought it was creative the way that they, you know, convinced him. I mean, it always is creative the way that they convince the Marks of, like, you know, the things that they're hallucinating, I suppose, in a sense. But I don't know. Like I said, this episode was so straightforward. Like, the plot was just very cut and dry. Like, I don't feel like I have too much more. Like, I genuinely have two notes left, and neither of them have any substance. It's just one thing that I thought was funny and one thing that I thought was dumb. That's it. Do you have any more complex thoughts about
this? Not really. Like, I had a thought and then I lost the thought almost immediately, which is just, you know, I'm a dumb bitch. It happens sometimes, you know, ripped to me.
We've been talking. It's 20 to 6 in the afternoon, in the evening, and I've been at your house since like 10:30 this morning, Jamie, and we've talked non-stop that entire time. I don't think it's you being dumb. I think your brain is tired. And we're going out after this. Like, give yourself a break.
Oh, I know what I was going to say.
Oh, she figured it out.
I figured it out. I worked it out. What I did want to say, I think that the fight choreography this week is really, really good.
Yeah,
I really like when they give... So, obviously, normally the sort of fight choreography is just... Elliot is a badass and kicks a hole. I love when they have to, like, they have, like, story reasons for it to not just be, like, Elliot can just wreck some dude's shit. So I think the scene where he's, like, fighting the guards and he's having to, like, catch shit so it doesn't break is so good.
Yeah, I really like when they give him extra parameters that he has to work within, because I think that it does add more of a challenge. Like, I've been saying since season one, Elliot feels so overpowered, like, that it's hard to believe that he can ever lose. So when they give him extra conditions that sort of limit him a bit, I do think that it helps with that, because it makes it more believable that he could be struggling, or that he could get, like, someone could get a hit in on him.
Because he can't just do whatever the fuck he wants. He has to be cautious and aware of exactly where everyone is at all times, so that nothing's...
Yeah, it's kind of like with whichever one where they were at the masquerade, like, party where they had to stop.
The Ten Little Grifters.
The Ten Little Grifters job. It's kind of like that, where he was, you know, having to interview people but not beat them up in the way he normally would beat them
up. But also he still... So it was just like, it's like, normally he gets information via torture. This time he still got it via torture. He was just subtle about it.
Yeah. To be fair, still not that subtle. But, like, you know, that's just another example.
Comparatively.
Like, him being given a parameter to sort of work within, I think, is interesting. I said before that I had two more notes, one that was something silly and one that was something dumb. Do you have a preference in which one you
go first? Go whichever order you think makes more sense.
Okie dokies. Number one, the episode opens with they're having their, like, meeting and he's pitching them these engines, right? At one point, he says, like, you know, like, you'll be able to, like, reduce your fares or whatever, like, make it more accessible to consumers. And he's like, or not. And then the entire boardroom engages in what I've decided to call an evil CEO laugh track. Because it was
I didn't think of it that. I thought of it as an evil chuckle.
It was so funny to me. I was like, that is the perfect, like, evil little giggle. Like, you know, it's just like, ooh, or we could exploit our customers. Ooh, cost of living crisis.
Or we could maximize profit.
Price gouging. Looking at you, Coles and Woolworths. You know, like, I just, I really had a little giggle, because I was like, the evil CEO laugh track.
Really popped off there.
Really, it's so specific. And the one dumb thing that I had left is that, I know we mentioned before that James or whatever, like, he is not actually, like, a science person. Yeah. He's not, like, super, like, intelligent. He's not the one coming up with these things. He's basically profiteering off other people's labor. But...
Capitalism.
That's capitalism, baby. But the fact that he did not know what pi was, like... Come on, like, bro, I'm not a mathematician either. Not by any fucking means.
I think it's less so him not... Like, I've never read it as him not knowing what pi is. I've always read it as him sort of being a bit slow to the take. Like, she's like, it's every other number of pi. And he's like, yeah, so? And she's like, well, they want you to send back the other number. Like, she's, like, expecting him to connect the dots of, like, it's pi. They want the other remaining numbers of pi. And him being like, okay, well, it's pi, so what? Like,
yeah, okay, because I interpreted him as, because I think he says, like, well, what does that mean or something? Or, like, what? Yeah. And I was like, what do you mean, what does that mean? Like, it's pi. Like, it's like, a very famous sequence of numbers. And even if you don't, like, I don't fucking know the sequence
of numbers. He dropped out of engineering school. I'm assuming he knows what pi is.
And I was like, come on, bro. Like,
I've always assumed it was less so, like, I don't know what pi is, and more, I don't know what you expect me to do with the information that it's pi.
Because I was like... This is ridiculous. Like, I understand that, you know, he's obviously not the one who's actually creating the things.
No, but like, he's dumb, but like he's not that dumb.
To be able to pitch, well, like, yeah. I think for me was like, because just like the concept of pie isn't necessarily like a, you know, a thing that everyone innately knows. Like you have to have a certain level of education. It has to have been in a certain area. Like, you know, it's not the kind of thing that everyone will just know, right? Mm. I don't think it's innate knowledge.
But you normally get taught it in, like, year 8. Like, yeah, it's not...
And, like, even if you were taught it, like, if you're not fucking thinking about it, there's a high possibility you'll forget. But, like, the thing is that even if he is not actively, like, part of the development process for these, you know, products and things that he's pitching, he's still pitching them.
Yeah.
Which leads to me to believe that he at least has a basic fundamental understanding of the science and the maths and the physics. Science and maths and physics, what am I saying? It's fucking physics is science. But you know what I mean. Like, he has to have a basic understanding of the fundamental concepts that go into this kind of work. And so I would assume that someone who would need at least a minimal background in mathematics, in physics, in chemistry, would know what pi is. If not the sequence, like, at least have a fundamental understanding of what it is and what it is related to, you know? So, like, that for me, I was just like... What?
Yeah, well,
but I think if I've just misinterpreted, then, you know.
I've just always interpreted as he doesn't know, like...
The significance of, yeah, okay.
He knows what pi is. Like, that's not what he's asking. He's asking, well, what do you want? Like, what am I meant to bloody do with that? Like, what?
Yeah. Which I love that he's asking her that as if she should have any fucking idea, considering she has less context than he does.
Yeah.
Like, what a wacko.
Though, her character this week.
Very fun.
So iconic. I love every single one of Sophie's characters. She can do no wrong. She is girl bossing her way out there. And, you know, I think we need to applaud her for that.
I do love Sophie. She very rarely disappoints me.
She just, you know.
Except for Chase and Men.
Yeah. Look, she said, though, I can fix him. And, like, she's not completely wrong. Like, she has mostly fixed him. He's still a bit faulty, but, like, he was worse.
He's still a bit faulty.
You know what I mean? Like, he's slowly, he's getting there.
Mm-hmm.
Like, whatever she's doing is working. So, like, I think we need to applaud her for that.
She certainly has more patience than I do.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, I have no more notes.
You have no more notes.
Nah, all I have is my rating.
Wow, this is going to be a short episode, I think, then.
I just don't think that there was that much else to
chat about. It's a silly episode. Like, there's nothing really wrong with it, but it's, like, it's not particularly, like...
Well, I feel like... Normally, because the plots in Leverage are, like, quite convoluted and individual, right? Like, I think a lot of the time we end up talking about what the presentation of the plot means for the characters.
Yeah.
And in this particular instance, personally, I don't think that we really got much that is noteworthy for Sophie, Elliot, Parker, or Hardison. The only thing we got of note is Nate. And I just feel like they were so fucking blunt about it that there's really nothing to discuss.
And also, it's a really weird thing for them to be giving us for Nate. Like... The bits that we get in terms of, like, character development and sort of, like, character layers this week for everyone else are, like, really, like, simple, really logical things.
Yeah, like, we get a little bit of background about Parker and Hardison's dating life. Like,
we get, a little bit about Parker and Hardison as a couple. We get a little bit about Sophie and how she's starting to gear up to move to directing rather than acting herself. And we also get a little bit about how... Elliot has been obviously actively improving his grifting skills.
Yeah, like, we get very little bits and pieces, but, like, nothing of any consequence. And then Nate is just being kind of dumb, like...
About the client, which is really weird, considering Nate's normally...
That's his whole fucking job. Can I ask? And, like, obviously, like, you know, spoilers and blah, 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 but, like, is this any kind of foreshadowing or, like, is this actually relevant? Or is this just, like, a weird choice they made on a one-off?
I honestly can't remember. Like,
oh, okay.
I don't think it's anything really specifically relevant. Like, I can't think of any reason why, like, thinking of where this East season ends up, I can't see any reason why it would be.
So it just feels like a weird.
This one is actually, like, this episode is written by someone who, as far as I know, never wrote another episode of Leverage. Like, this is their one and only episode that they wrote.
Okay.
Mm.
Well, that probably makes sense then that it feels kind of weird. Although, why they would have someone come in as a once-off in the fifth season and not, I don't know. Like, it feels weird. Like, it feels like a showrunner should have looked at this and said, hey, we should maybe refine this a bit.
Yeah.
Because it kind of feels like... That actually really helps me to put into perspective some of the choices.
It almost feels like he watched the first couple of seasons and hasn't really seen.
I don't think it actually sounds like that at all. I think it sounds like they were given a brief on who these characters are at a very fundamental level.
Mm-hmm.
Because if I was told.
This feels like them on paper, but not in practice.
Yeah. Because like, if you think about it, even what I was saying about the ending, not really incorporating mm-hmm. Elliot makes sense. Because if you're told, hey, I know you don't know anything about these characters, but these two are in a relationship and these two are in a relationship and this other guy is like their friend who is also there. Like, that makes sense. It makes sense that we got a big focus on Nate and Sophie's relationship and they work a lot together in this episode. And same with Parker and Hardison.
Mm-hmm.
Like, and Elliot's out there by himself. Like, it makes sense if you are told very, very brief things about these characters and you haven't actually seen anything. It also makes a lot of sense having, like, Nate. Like, if you were told at a very, very fundamental level, Nate's character, like, it makes sense mm-hmm. to do a plot line where he's not listening to someone and Sophie has to be the one to be like, well, you know, better luck next time, babe, you know? And so I think that actually makes a lot of sense. It feels like they just came in, hadn't really done their research, were given a very brief outline, and then no one course corrected.
Yeah. They were like, oh, that's close enough, like,
yeah, which feels like a weird take in the fifth season.
Yeah.
Like, I can understand season one. This episode would fit a lot better in season one outside of the obvious relationships, but it feels kind of hollow.
Oh, one other thing that I do just want to really quickly point out.
Mm-hmm.
We get another It's a Very Distinctive.
Oh, we do.
We get It's a Very Distinctive static this week. We can add that to the counter, which is counter of one of the most iconic jokes of all time. I was going to
say a counter that we most certainly have not been keeping. No.
But I just like pointing it out because I really love, like, it's just such a good joke.
Yeah, I do like that. I don't even know if I'd class it as a joke. I think it's more of like, obviously a catchphrase at this point, and it's just such a fun little nod.
It's a reoccurring character bit.
Yeah.
And it's fun and I like it. So, you know.
That's all that matters.
It's all that matters. We're not complaining about it. All right, lovely. I think that brings us to the end of the episode. If you don't have anything else you wanted to add.
I have nothing else to add about this one.
Okie dokies. So, how would you rate this episode out of 5?
I gave it a 3.
Mm-hmm.
I think it was fine. And, like, I mean, I basically outlined over the last sort of half hour-ish, like, the problems that I had with it. I think it was okay. It wasn't like I was watching it and being like, oh my god, this is terrible. But it did feel weird. Like, the Nate stuff felt really reductive and sort of old and there just wasn't really any, I don't know, this episode just felt like it was missing a certain je ne sais quoi.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like the characters all felt a little bit off, although I did love Elliot. And the plot, while like it was simple and it was easy to follow, but I think that like Leverage either really captures you with heavy character stuff mm-hmm. or a heavy plot. And this episode had sort of neither.
Yeah.
Like compared to other cons that they've done, this was fucking nothing. And compared to other character growth we've had, this was not only sort of nothing, but also confusing.
Yeah.
So I think that it kind of falls short in those areas. Knowing that this is a once-off writer, like I think I can be a little less harsh on it
mm-hmm.
because I can give them leeway for not having the experience of writing for this show before, these characters before.
Mm-hmm.
However, I feel like I can be a little more critical of whoever was show running because I think they should have sent this script back for another draft.
Yeah. All right, lovely. Well, the next episode is called The French Connection Job.
Ooh.
What do you think it's about?
Well, initially I thought you were going to say French Canadian. So
we were going to invite KJ on next time.
Yeah. So I was going to say like, you know, some kind of like Canadian mm-hmm. sort of like cross border situation. Mm-hmm. Seeing as you said French Connection instead, I'm wondering mm-hmm. if maybe they're going to have some kind of international relations, which could be really fun because we mm-hmm. have Sterling who's in Interpol and we have really not seen anything come out of that. Like, literally at all. And I was so excited when we found out he was going to be in Interpol because I was like, oh, you can do
Oh, we have payoff coming this season. Don't you worry.
So I that's very exciting that you've just said that. But, you know, I think that there's a possibility that that could be it, or else it could be some kind of function of the con. Like maybe Sophie portrays mm-hmm. herself as a French sort of dignitary or something. Yeah. Or actually, it could be really fun to have, like, Tara come in mm-hmm. as, like, a bonus kind of, like,
I think way back in like season one or two, they had someone do the green screen and they had that guy come on and he did the really good accent. Mm-hmm. And I can't remember which nationality he was in.
It was Indian. So he's Indian, but he was actually Scottish. And then he did the really accent. Stereotypical Indian accent for the Namaste dude.
Yeah. That's the one. And so like they could maybe do something similar, but they could bring Tara back because we haven't seen Tara in a hot minute. And I think she would be a real fun addition to season five. Obviously, like a show like Leverage, they like their recurring characters and being the final season, I can't imagine they'd want to skimp out.
Yeah.
So I think it could be fun to see her again.
Easy done. Well, thank you so much for listening to us today. If you want to join us again next week for the French Connection job, we would absolutely love to have you. Otherwise, if you want to interact with us at all outside of listening to us ramble on about some podcasting television show stuff, you can always find us on social medias. We are in various places. All the links will be in the description below. If you want to talk to us about anything, talk to us about literally anything, but suggested conversation topics do include...
How did you feel about this episode? Just generally. Like, I'm interested because I think it's an odd one.
Mm. Do you believe aliens are real?
Oh, I was going to ask you that. I personally... I think that they must exist somewhere. The universe is literally a limitless void. Like,
I think it's very unlikely that there exists no other living society ever, like, out there. But I also think it's very unlikely that any society will ever reach the point of interplanetary space travel or, like, connecting with alternate sort of planets and living species. Like, I don't think any society is ever going to get to the point where they actually do manage to have contact with any other living society on another planet, because I think most societies are employed by that point.
I honestly just think that we have enough problems, like, internationally, like, we have enough problems within our own countries and then within international relations. I don't think we need to take intergalactic relations into that. Mm-hmm. Do you know what I mean? Like, the world can't cooperate during a global pandemic. Do you think we're going to be able to cooperate to come up with intergalactic standards of law? I don't think so. So, I just feel like maybe it's better if we just don't. I feel like there's enough problems without adding intergalactic relations to the list.
Mm.
Just personally.
I think that's so valid.
Thank you.
All right, lovely. Well, thank you so much for joining us. Have a lovely evening, afternoon, night light.
I love a good night light.
Night.
Did you have a night light when you were a kid?
No, I didn't.
I didn't either.
I was never afraid of the dark.
No, me neither. We had a nightlight at the end of the hallway, but that was more so because there were like two steps and my mum didn't want us to like trip and break our noses or something. So, you know, that's a safety thing.
Yeah, I can't say I did. No. Which is so whack because you know what? My niece and nephew now, do you know what my dad bought them?
What?
He bought them these little like star globe things that you put a disc in and it like projects galaxies onto the ceiling, which I think is a fucking ripoff. Why did my niece and nephew get that and I never did? Why is my dad buying that for his grandchildren and not for me?
Do you know what I always wanted? I always wanted to have my whole ceiling covered in those like little green sticker stars.
I did have that, except for I didn't have enough star stickers, so some of them were just dolphins.
Just on your ceiling.
The little glow-in-the-dark ones?
I was obsessed with that. I had a small, like, fairy set.
I'm pretty sure they only got removed from the ceiling, like, 2 months back because somebody else moved into my old room. Yeah. And so they painted it. So
that's so funny. I had a fairy set, and actually I've still got my childhood lamp is, like, in my wardrobe at home. And so there's stickers on the, like, the trunk of the lamp, I don't know what you call it. The stem, maybe? And sometimes at night, I can, because they're, like, light-activated, I can still see them glowing from inside my wardrobe if I close the door open. I spotted it the other night. I was like, what the fuck is that little green guy?
Demons.
But no, it's just a little fairy. Which, to be honest, impressive that it's still fucking glowing that strong, because I've had them since I was in primary school. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So, anyway.
Bye!
Bye! I love dropping lore in at the end of our episodes. Oh, fuck. All right.